Andy, how's it going, man?
Not bad. Yeah, not bad. A lot. Like, I think the theme for the last month, if not more, for me has just been a lot of things coming together. So there's a lot of pieces we're putting in place, a lot of things we're forgetting about that we now have to find the time to add and polish and all this and that. So it's been busy, but it's been nice seeing it all come together. How are things going on your end?
Good, good. Yeah. Also a lot, just a lot going on. I think we perceive it as a lot going on just because of all the other kind of emotional stuff going on in our lives right now. But yeah, it's been, you know, yeah, a lot of kind of things that we're juggling, a lot of plates that I'm spinning. Yeah, feeling overwhelmed at times, but trying to kind of rein it back in and have things seem a little more reasonable. Yeah.
What you were last time I think we talked, you mentioned putting up an ad for a sales rep, an account executive. How has that been going?
So it's going good. Following a lot of the same process we have for like the last couple of hires. So like our stack is like pretty basic. It's just like post it on WeWork Remotely and Dynamite Jobs and get really good applicants, I think, from both those places. And always have like a test question in the application. So like for a marketer, it was a video. For this, it's to write a cold email. I said, write a cold email to the head of marketing at Zoom. And so that's like just really easy because then like if they haven't done the homework to find out that the head of Zoom's marketing, her name is Janine. Like if they don't say, hey, Janine, then like, you know, they haven't done the homework and like that just is disqualifying. So we've gotten about 100 applications and emailed about 10 or 15 of them. And from that, and then that email just asked, you know, hey, why are you looking to do something different now? And what is it about this opportunity at Castos that intrigued you? And so that was like a good way to see people's kind of writing style and thought process. And then from there, are starting to schedule about a half a dozen interviews for next week. It's going good. It is really hard to hire salespeople, I think, because they all sound really good, you know, on paper. So I think getting people on the phone and talking sales with them will be really telling, you know, like on paper, it's really easy to polish things, but kind of on the fly, I think people's true colors shine through more quickly. And that's like what a good salesperson needs to be able to do is, you know, think on their feet and stuff like that. So yeah, it's coming along.
Are there anything specifically you're looking for in this person? Because you are wanting them to be maybe not incredibly senior right now, but at least have the potential to have a lot of responsibility. So like, what are you looking for to help like make sure those are the kind of people you're attracting?
Yeah, I think that for me, like the biggest single thing maybe is like autonomy, people's ability to be autonomous and like own something. And yeah, so I mean, if they can't, you know, in a remote environment and like managing accounts and leads and things like that, like I just can't hound people about that stuff. Like I don't hound people, but like, you know, stay involved like I do with some other things. So like that's the biggest thing. And that kind of tells to seniority or ability to be senior, you know, I think. That's like the biggest single thing for me is like someone's ability to own this thing and be autonomous and just kind of run with it and like determine their own success.
Do you screen for that separately from kind of the process you've already laid out? Or are there things that in the interview you're going to dig into or just look for? Because yeah, I feel like for early stage companies, especially ones growing, having someone who can be autonomous is not just huge value add, but it's almost essential because we don't have the time to actively manage someone as much as we could. If our job was just to be a manager, we wouldn't need someone who could just kind of go off on their own and get the job done without check-ins, without all of that. And so it's super important, but how are you trying to screen for that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's really like the crux of like the whole interview process and screening process. I read a really good book. It was recommended to me by Ruben Gomez called The Who Method. And it's kind of like EOS, right? It's like a framework for hiring. And in the second interview, basically it is to ask the person to walk you kind of chronologically through their last three jobs. Like, what did you do? Why did you go there? Why did you quit? What was the best part of it? What was the worst part of it? What did you learn? And like in them telling that story about their previous, you know, most recent work experience, I think really like brings out a lot of that, like, oh, someone is like always running away from, quote, a bad boss or a shitty work environment or something. Or like, hey, you know, I tapped out, you know, my potential in this role at the company. I left to go grow and do a bigger and better thing for myself and my career in this other new job. And so like that interview process or framework really helps with that. And I guess the rest of like the independent and like ownership part of it, I try to just infer from that discussion. But just having somebody walk you through their work history is really, like, for me, is like a really applicable like set of knowledge there, you know?
Yeah. And it's also something I'm assuming most people haven't rehearsed.
Yeah.
Like they have their own internal stories. They've thought about it. Maybe they talked to friends about it, but they're not really expecting to go really through the journey as much in detail in an interview. I'm sure they expect to get asked, why are you leaving and your last job? And like, why are you coming here? But not really to just like walk through the actual journey. So you'll probably get more honest or at least more candid answers. Mm,
yeah. So the book encourages, and I have like really dug into specific things. So like somebody says something interesting, you're like, whoa, stop. Tell me more about that. And like, let's go down that rabbit hole. Let's talk about this thing that you just said and understand more about it. Cause that's like, that's what it really is like get the pre-canned answers out of the way so that we can really get down to like the meat of what we're talking about.
Have you gone through a full hiring process with this method before?
So the last three people we hired, I went through the process. Yeah.
Okay. What's changed? Like, how have you not even really iterated on it, but what things did you get wrong the first and second time around? What changes did you have to make, or just how did you have to kind of work to better implement it?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing I have a hard time with is that it's really two real phone interviews, you know, like I just want to have one, but like, that was the biggest thing for me to get over is like the call next week is going to be like 15 or 20 minutes. And then the last one is going to be 30 or 45 minutes. And for me, it was just like, oh, that's a lot. Like a good candidate's not going to want to go through this. And like, that's just something that I had to get over. But because the first one is really just like a culture fit, like, let's just get to know each other. Are you a reasonable person? Could we, you know, get along and want to go have a beer together at our retreat? Could we work together? And then the last one is really like the content at, you know, content interview to say like, are you kind of the right person and skill set and background for the role? Yeah. And then like, I screwed up everything about like note-taking, you know, like, and the first, cause you're going to talk to a bunch of people. And so like, I have an area in Notion, like a private area in Notion. And I have like a template set of questions I want to ask everybody. And then I copy that for each person. And I put my notes down in it and stuff. So I can go back and look once this, you know, each round of interviews is done and go back and look and say, okay, you know, Susie said this and Bob said this. And so I don't have to remember all that stuff.
Do you, would after that second interview, you extend the offer and then do you have them do a trial period? Are they jumping right into full-time W-2? Like what does the step after that when you feel confident that you have the person?
Yeah, that's a good point. For a salesperson, I definitely would think about a trial period. Like for our developer and our support person, and even our other developer over here, like the three people that we've hired for this, they just kind of came straight into like full-time. But for, I think like for a salesperson, it's really pretty well accepted. Like you have a 90 or 180 day trial period. And part of that is we'll guarantee their commission for that time. So like we'll put them on a draw to say like, okay, you know, just for instance, like your base salary is going to be $5,000 a month and your at plan commission is going to be another $5,000 a month, just throwing out numbers. We'll guarantee that for the first 90 days. And that's your trial period. At the end of it, we'll see kind of where you are or whatever that ends up being. But that's a pretty standard thing. Like, I don't know if it's a pretty standard thing in SaaS, but that's definitely a pretty standard thing, like in the sales world in general.
It makes sense because I also feel like it's maybe more obvious for a sales role if someone is doing well, because it just ties so closely to performance in like a very direct way. and their pay is so closely tied to that as well. So like, it's beneficial for them to see if they're the right fit for everyone. And it's like easier to measure, because that's where trial projects in other areas can get hard. Like, mm-hmm. like it's for me, we haven't done trials on support really, I guess maybe we technically did, but it was just more, it would have just been subjective of like, nah, like this person just not getting it right. I wouldn't have had like real metrics for it, which it feels weird. And on the developer side, it's like we will do a paid quick trial of like something that takes them a day or two to do, so we can get a better feel for their code quality and just how they think and all of that. But it's still hard to, at least for a non-developer, for like to get something that's like objective in place for the test. Like you can't, which I feel weird about, is saying like, we're going to be trying you out here, but we're not telling you the criteria. And so sales, I feel like, makes it easier to just do that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, yeah, in support, it would be really hard. In marketing, I think it's kind of hard. Maybe you could run like, you know, have them run an email campaign or an ad sequence or something like that, maybe. Yeah, I think doing that as part of like a paid
projects.
Mm-hmm. Like a paid test thing during
right.
the post initial interview, at least. Yeah. And then like with our developer stuff, we had our lead developer do the real like content interview, I'll call it, like the in-depth mm-hmm. interview. And that was cool because then he's really bought into the decision we make. Right. So like, okay. I basically say, here's five people. I'd be happy to hire any of them. You know, they all look good, mm-hmm. whatever salaries are in line. I did the culture interview. We're good. And he goes and does the real technical thing. And so that's worked out really well because we've been on the same page with both of them. And that's cool. And I think as we have like leaders in each division of the business, you know, it's silly to say because there's only one person in some of these, but as they go to hire other people, you know, in marketing or in sales or in support, they're hiring people for their group in a way, you know, like, mm-hmm. so I like getting down that path because I think it gets buy-in from everybody that's already there, you know?
That makes a ton of sense. It's something that I'm thinking more about just by talking with you, by reading, by just really digging into all of this. It's I know I've talked in past episodes about like my hesitance to give up marketing, especially mm-hmm. when I'm not sure the scale we're actually shooting for with the business. And I think I've just accepted, and not like in a forced way, like I'm not like reluctant to, but I think it's just become more and more clear to me that the path forward for the business to give it the best chance to continue growing is really to just build out the team around me mm-hmm. so that I can grow into a true, or at least truer CEO role. Mm-hmm. Because I always feel funny, like even saying I'm a CEO right now, like I usually just don't. When people ask what I do, it's like, oh, I just run like a small business. I run a small software company, something like that. Because like, I feel like to be a CEO implies like scale. It implies just a lot of things that like I'm not at. And obviously I'm the one ultimately making decisions and those responsibilities like rest with me. But I want to work towards that role of being responsible for the more strategic decisions for the company and focusing as much as my time on that part of the business as I can. And I think the balance for me is going to be, I still do think I have a lot of value to add in marketing strategy and product strategy. And I don't think that I'm going to give those up anytime soon, but it's nuts for me to try to do the strategy and the execution of all of that. And I think that's really the execution is what I've got to get off my plate and work towards that in other areas by bringing on very specific contractors for different marketing things, by working with a designer, by bringing on more developers and all of that. But it's just becoming clearer and clearer to me that, yeah, it's not sustainable to just try to own the entire marketing stack when, yeah, I'm not, there are other places I can add more value.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the interesting things about that is, like, when we're at this place where I think we both are, we're kind of straddling the maker role and the manager role a little bit, is it's hard to embrace the, it's hard to make that leap and like fully go to the manager world, because you still have to do stuff, right? You still have to actually execute marketing stuff, actually, you know, hop in to help scout and answer tickets or whatever. And I think that just mentally, you're always like shackled a little bit back to like this world we came from. And I think that like when you or we or people in general can really like get that team that you trust and empower to go do this stuff in each point of division of the business, that you will embrace that and really be able to be okay with it. You know, maybe be okay with it and then embrace it, like in that order, you know, because you won't feel guilty that like, oh, you're still the person doing some of the work, but then you also try to carve out mental space for the big picture strategy and partnerships and super high leverage stuff. When you don't have to carve out that time and mental space, I think is when that transition could happen. Like, I'm not there for sure. And like when I get glimpses of being there is exactly that, is when like I don't have any other responsibilities maybe for the day or the morning, and I can just do big picture stuff. And like, that's just a glimpse into like, I think where it sounds like you'll be in maybe a few months is like, get these people in to handle the execution so that at least several days of the week, you can focus on like the CEO level stuff.
Yeah. Because I feel like there's ultimately, I think there's more levels than this, but the steps I see for a founder or for like a small business owner looking to grow, whatever it may be in the CEO role, it's the one that we're working our way out of now, which is getting more and more of the like day-to-day execution off our plate, where like truly the majority of our time is spent executing. And I think we're both past that, but we're still spending time on that. Then there's a spot where it's, we become the manager and we're not doing the day-to-day execution, but we're still guiding strategy on like pretty granular level. We're checking in with the team regularly. We're reviewing their progress. We're giving feedback, that. And then there's the, what I see is like the next step is where you have kind of an executive team where they're the ones doing that management and you're checking in with the executives. And I feel like that last step is a ways off for me at least. And it's just trying to get to that next step where, except like I will be a manager. I'm not going to be a pure CEO where it's just only strategy, but it's just higher leverage things where I will have a hand in projects, but not the one actually getting it across the finish line, just making sure it's getting there and giving feedback to kind of keep it on course. Yeah, it's a bit scary getting there because it's like, especially when it's the kind of my baby, it's the part closest to me is the marketing. It's like giving that up. And then knowing, oh shit, I gotta like actually learn how to actually manage people. But where do you feel like you're at right now on that? Well, one, does that, those kind of steps make sense to you? And like, where do you, if they do, where do you feel you're at right now on that transition?
Yeah, totally. It totally does. And I feel like in certain areas of the company, I'm pretty solidly either at the manager or the step above that role and getting there maybe. And some I'm definitely still in the weeds, like in the maker role, like ultimately responsible for this thing getting done. But it's funny, as you were kind of talking through that, like the yardstick for this transition for me is the ability to take vacation, right? Is like, ultimately, if the business is not reliant on you, you can take a week off, like entirely off, right? Just go to, you know, go on safari, right? And like the business will do as good as if you were there. And like, that's a long way off for me. And like, I've never, like as an entrepreneur, I've never been there. And I think the only way you can get there is by, yeah, you have to have the people in the right place that you trust and that you empower to do these things and make these decisions and own, like we're talking about at the beginning, like have the ownership of the outcome of this thing so that like, when you go and are involved, either from like a manager or a, like a higher level perspective, like you add value maybe, you know, or at least reassure them of what they're doing. But if not, they should be able to do, you know, a good enough job, you know, to be successful. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I like the metric of the vacation, because right now I'm actually getting ready to, it's not much of a vacation, but I'll be taking, I guess, the weekend off, which shouldn't really count. But then like Monday, Tuesday, part of the day Friday. So it's like, it'll be a few days of not full disconnect. And to me, like, that's a vacation, but I'm going to be checking in. If people have questions, I'm going to be answering them. And then marketing just kind of goes on pause, but I'll get everything set up before then. And so that's like my reality of vacation right now, which isn't bad. But to get that true unplug vacation, it's like, yeah, that's not doable right now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the next step is getting to 1 to 2 weeks of vacation where you could really unplug. And that's where, yeah, I would just need to have a true team in place to execute. Because, and maybe this is just me being a little bit micromanaging, but it's like, you could upfront give enough clarity and feedback and direction on some like projects that they can work through, and that like they are going to be able to, they'll make their own decisions along the way, but like they can stay busy and move in the right direction until then, but not so far without course correction that they just go in a wildly different direction. But it's like, I feel like when you get to that last kind of level of management where you're truly at the top of the pyramid, you've got executives under you and then maybe other managers, but just people below, there's a separation between you and the employees. That's when it's like, no, you could be gone for months and potentially, or a month, and there are people who are making strategic decisions without you. And it's like, that isn't, I'm not really shooting for that in the near future at all. It's just getting to that next spot where it's like the entire business can move forward without me for at least a few weeks. I feel like that's like not too much of a stretch, but it'll take a good amount of work to get there, just because we're going to need the right people.
As a like data point on my journey to that, I've been on the phone. I had a call right before this, and then we've been chatting for a while. So I have like 2 hours on the phone, and I have 19 Slack messages that I have to reply to. So that is,
wait, what?
That is how? Just like a metric of how far away I am from like a 2 week vacation.
That gives me anxiety, where I feel like right now, and this is, our dev team has expanded. We're getting a better handle on that. There's a lot more we need to do, but like most of the problems in our business are on tech, and like they know not to bother me with that, because like I can't help them. And there's enough people in there that like they can get together and brainstorm on. And it's nice to see that working. And then on support, we're onboarding the new support person. And so like I still have some responsibilities there when our other support person is off, which is Tuesday and Wednesday. And so like sometimes support things will come through for now, but I think that's close to getting off my plate. And it's just like the random things. So for me, like my inbox isn't that bad. The Slack, I don't think I get 19 notifications in a day. Maybe. Probably not.
Oh, I just looked at them. Fair enough. Fairly 3 or 4 of them are from friends, but yeah.
Okay. But no, I mean, that's what is usually like pulling at you today? Like, what are the things that you think pull you out of that CEO role and get you more into the business than you would ultimately like to have, like, be?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that I'll answer specifically, but in general, like the feeling that I have and the thing that I'm trying to move past is like people putting things back on me, you know? And I don't mean to sound lazy. Like, it sounds really lazy when I say that out loud, but like, if we have people for most of these roles, then like they shouldn't need me. They shouldn't need to, you know, bounce tickets back to me or run a marketing idea by me or whatever. And I feel like that's where like I've come up short lately. It is like a bunch of decisions and things need my involvement, or I'm involved in a lot of things, whether they need me to be or not. Like I still am. And so that's kind of the feeling that I'm trying to get away from, is that like, you know, if anything beyond the ordinary happens, it comes to me, you know, and like people push things to me. And that's just like, I think all entrepreneurs are micromanagers to some extent. And so I think that that's like it rearing its head. But yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of everything. It's a little bit of product. It's a little bit of support. It's a little bit of marketing. It's a little bit of success. But like, I think the plan out of this area for me is, like we talked about, like having leaders in each division. And the goal is like, either if it's a leader by themselves, to just say like, go make the decision. Like if it's a reversible decision that you think isn't going to end the company, go make it. And, you know, let's catch up on it on our weekly call. And if it's not, you know, if it's somebody that's not the leader, so if it's a developer that's not our lead developer, say, go to lead developer and have them make that decision. Or you guys make it together. And if it needs to bubble up to me after that, then, you know, it's a really kind of big thing. So that's the framework that I'm trying to work towards. Because I think that, you know, it empowers those leaders within each kind of functional group to be leaders and kind of continue to own that thing. And then it gives the rest of the team a person to go to that's not me. And so that seems like a reasonable place to start.
At the scale you're at now, are those leaders, I'm guessing it's going to be a mix, but like, are those leaders dedicated people? Like, that is their job, is they are the leader of this team?
No.
Or
no,
is they it someone all, who on the team right now is the leader? Like, it's like, go to this, like, okay.
Yeah, they're player coaches,
The difficulty, I feel like, is going to just be, how do you coach them to grow into that role?
Obviously not very well so far. Like, no, but one of the conversations that I've been having kind of with each of them is talking about like the value of their time, because I'm trying to value my time more, to say like, please don't get me into this thing that is like, you know, is just not super valuable. And so trying to let them know that, you know, hey, there's this thing that like your time is too valuable for, and that someone else should take care of this thing. So trying to kind of instill or like enable that kind of thought process with folks that are like, you know, player coaches, but to try to take them more to the coach side of that relationship. If there are other people on the team that can do that, you know, some of these things to free up more of their time and mental space for the kind of the coach stuff.
How do you communicate that your time is more valuable than theirs? This is something that I have a lot of hangups around, because objectively, that's what we're ultimately saying. Mm-hmm. But we're not saying that like we're better than them. We're not saying any of these other like value judgments of them as a person or this and that. But like, I just have a hard time like going in that direction. And unfortunately, like my team, everyone on it really gets, like, this is just something that I feel like our team intuitively gets of what are the things that they can do best that I don't need to be involved in, that they can handle and this and that. But it's just, I don't know how to more directly like go in that direction without just being like, no, my time's more valuable than yours, so please do these things that I shouldn't do.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a dick, but like, yeah, I don't know. Is it something that you just don't have much of a hang up on, or?
No, I definitely do. I definitely have a lot of hang ups around this kind of thing. And I think what I try to approach it with is, you know, I'm just super busy with a lot of things. Like, could you take care of this thing? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't think that expresses this idea exactly, but kind of gets, I don't know. I don't know if it gets the job done, but that's the approach I'm trying to take.
Yeah.
Not that they're not busy, but that's my excuse, I guess.
Yeah. And I think it's just emphasizing that cultural idea of spend your time where you can add the most value. Mm. And it should be clear that even without talking about how much value each of these things add, that like, is this really the most valuable thing you could be doing? Is this the most valuable thing I could be doing? And it I guess it's just more obvious that without taking the value judgments of just like, no, like people know that, okay, they're focused on this one area. You're trying to move the entire business forward. So there's just different buckets that tasks fall into in terms of value there. But
yeah,
these are all the things that it's like, I do see that next step of first, I have to just grind through this right now to get people on board and get more and more of the day-to-day off my plate. And then it's going to be splitting my time between managing that team, between strategy for the actual business, and then still like finding time to learn more about managing and learn more about motivation and recruiting and all of those other things. Because that's like an entirely separate bucket. It's like in a vacuum, it's like, yeah, the CEO role is to focus on these higher leverage things around the strategy, the vision. But then we also have to be the ones like architecting, how do we actually get there? And how do we get the right people? How do we manage those people? How do we just like run this machine? And yeah, you got it.
And I think it's like a spectrum, you know, like a spectrum of like, you start as like a, you know, single founder writing code, doing marketing copy, you know, sales, all this kind of stuff. And then you add people to the team and start delegating some of that ownership and responsibility. And like, you know, when you're 200 people, then you're certainly like very far on that spectrum. And so I think, yeah, I mean, honestly, I think, I hope for our journeys, we're still like in the first quarter of it, to where like,
yeah,
I would love to be a 100 person company. And like that dynamic is, yeah, really different, and learning a lot of different skills. And it's funny, I was thinking the other day, because I've had some like really stressful days lately. You hear, actually, I think I heard Nick Francis on your podcast talk about like, it's not any easier now, and like the decisions aren't any less stressful. And like that really kind of hit home, is like, you know, we're not a tiny company, like we're a small company, we're not a tiny company anymore. And like the stress level is maybe higher than it ever has been, you know? So like, I don't expect that to change. It just will be about different stuff, I guess.
Yeah. And I came to a similar realization recently, and I'm sure I'm going to have this realization multiple times like throughout my career, but yeah, of that idea that the stress isn't going to go away. So I have to I have to accept that, because it's easy as an entrepreneur to get in that spot where you just say, okay, when I make this hire, when we get to this revenue spot, when we get to whatever, things are going to be better. And some of that like is true. I hate when people say, more money doesn't make you happier, more X doesn't make you happy, this and that. Like, it does not solve all of your problems. But like, even right now in our business, there are certain things that are much, much easier decisions than they used to be. It's like, I don't have to deal with shitty customers anymore. People, like, I don't have to fight for every customer. I want to give amazing support to the customers that are the right fit for us and are willing to put in the work on their part and all of that. But like, if someone is just sucking up a ton of our time, not being like, or people are pushing for these features that I don't think we need, that aren't priorities, it's like, I don't have to feel like, oh shit, like if I lose this one, this is going to hurt the business, then what are we going to do? Or like, oh, if I don't add this feature, people are going to cancel and all this and that. It's like, we're established enough where like, I feel like we have some staying power. And that does take off a lot of relief from those like smaller decisions that in the early days really like war on me. But there are tons of other things that now I'm dealing with. And it's like, as you grow, there are like, you're not worried about just evaporating overnight. And you're not worried about decisions just taking down the company and just like having this monumental impact in either direction, which makes, in my opinion, an easier decision because the risks are lower. But yeah, there still are stresses nonstop. And a lot of them, I mean, like we're not even that far along the journey. And there's still plenty of information out there that we can read on best practices and this and that. But it's like, for me personally, like these are, in the earlier days, the correct answer just seemed much more obvious to me.
Yes.
And it was still like a pain in the ass of getting it done. And all these things would come up along the way. But it was never like I was questioning, like, what do we need to do next? And as we've grown, it's like, okay, I still have a clear idea of where we're going, but it's a little bit hazier at points. And it's like, oh, like, who do we need to get there? How do I get those people? It's like, there's
positioning and strategy and hiring and funding. Yeah, for sure.
And it's like all the areas that are pushing me outside of my comfort zone. So it's like,
but are higher leverage, right? Then like, do I choose Drip or MailChimp or whatever, you know,
right,
like those.
Right. Exactly. And so it's, yeah, I think I personally just need to do a better job of coping with the stresses. Mm. Have you read the book, The Upside of Stress?
No, huh?
I'd recommend it. I'm probably going to like read it again. But a lot of it just comes down to the idea that stress isn't inherently bad. It's a fact of life. And a lot of the negative impacts of stress come from kind of people's belief over it. Like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way of like, if sure. you view that stress is harmful, it will have harmful impacts on you. And it's not like a purely mind over matter thing. Like, it's a very like researched and well-written book on this. But yeah, I think it's just feeling the stress and overwhelm that I'm under now. There's more I can do to kind of focus us down to not get pulled in so many directions, but I'm never going to get that to that level where the stresses just go away. I've got to kind of accept that and just find ways to get through it better.
Yep.
And just cope with it better.
But, nice, man. It's a cool discussion. Folks listening, any kind of questions or comments, leave us a comment for this episode, seekingscale.com, or shoot us a message, podcast@seekingscale.com.
Yeah, this was fun. Thanks for listening, everybody.